welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, October 5th, 2007. Well, we got a great guest coming on in a minute tonight, and I want to announce that David Icke will be on the 19th, October 19th. Myself and David Icke will be there. I'll actually be in New York, but we're going to have him on. We had recently a friend of mine had a great experience. We all went down to Arkansas. It was a friend of one of my clients, his son's birthday, and he wants to go to the middle of the earth. So we figured, why not go to the middle earth in Arkansas, starting there with the cave? So we went down to the Hurricane River Cave. And it was a lot of fun. We flew down in her private jet, which was kind of an experience for me. I'm not used to that. And on the way back, referencing the show before us, we had a bunch of UFOs following us back, which we took a bunch of pictures of, which was really interesting. One of them looked like a ship that got thrown out of the Bermuda Triangle, so talk about that later. Also, we've got the Chrysalidome now available. We're just getting the first ones out to people. They're going to sell like crazy. We'll have some information on the website, and we'll be in New York on the 18th of October. So with those announcements out of the way, I also want to welcome my Florida audience. 1340 AM Tantalk Radio down there, and then you guys have made me the voice of Tampa Bay. So I know there's several million down there listening tonight. And so tonight, directly from the Hurricane River Cave, I want to introduce Chester Beck. Now, Chester, I've learned a lot from him. He was our guide. He runs this cave operation down there in Arkansas, and I didn't realize the ecological merit of caving. I mean, this guy really, really woke me up to the importance of caves and water and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, Chester, are you there?
Yes, sir. I sure am, Dr. Bell.
Well, tell us a little bit about how you got into this and give us some background. My audience is always like to have a background, you know?
Okay.
You know, we want to know about Chester right now.
I started exploring caves at the age of 14 years of age. And by the age, I used to keep a log of all the caves I'd been to. An old caver gave me that experience. And by the age of 18, I'd have been in over 200 wild caves. And I'm 35 years of age now. And caves has always been my passion. Matter of fact, my mother, the first time I was ever in a cave, my mother took me to Blanchard Springs Caverns here in Arkansas. And she took a picture of me in the cave. I mean, my head was all drawn back, my eyes wide open, mouth wide open. I mean, you could just see the awe in my eyes. And so I think it's kind of something I was born with. My mother tells me when I was in her womb that she actually craved dirt, which is kind of odd.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Physical.
So
yeah.
It's a passion, and it's something that it's really weird. It's like when I'm out exploring caves, it really puts me in perspective with nature and the conservation side of nature that we all need to be aware of.
How did you meet your wife, by the way?
Well, that's kind of an interesting story. Back in 1993, I was manager at a commercial cave here in Arkansas called Cosmic Caverns. And me and another gentleman was actively working trying to find a new section of the cave. There was a lot of signs that proved that there was something back further in the cave. The whole cave sits on a fault line, and there was a lot of airflow coming out of this small hole. And so we were taking shovels and picks, and we were digging away at the mud. And anyway, we popped up into a new section of cave.
So you were digging like on the wall of the cave.
Yes, sir, we sure were. We didn't know what was back there.
Yeah.
But we knew that there was, you know, it had to be very pristine and very beautiful. And that happened January 23rd of 1993. We busted into the new section at Cosmic. And we found two underground lakes, one underground lake. Still to this day, nobody's ever touched bottom. We've had divers come in from all of the United States, and nobody's touched bottom. And we found soda straw formations over 9 feet long. And all we kept saying was, oh, my God, oh, my God. So that's what we called it. We called it the Oh, My God Room.
Wow.
And, so it was quite the experience. And as a cave explorer, anytime you find a new section of cave, it's very important to map that section of cave because in order to study the cave to its fullness, it has to be mapped.
Wow.
And nobody had ever mapped it, and so I went back about 3 years ago to map that new section of cave that I found in 93 and met my wife there.
Right in the cave or what?
She was working at Cosmic. Yeah.
Wow.
And real pretty thing.
She got beautiful eyes, by the way.
She does,
all,
yeah. I'm real proud
of her. She's got some eyes, yeah.
I tell everybody that all my discoveries, she was definitely my most beautiful.
So you found your wife in a cave.
I found my wife in a cave, yes, sir. And,
now that is so cool.
Yeah, and she was helping me. I talked her into helping me map the new section, and we were crossing the underground lake in a boat, and she fell out of the boat into the water. And like I said, nobody's ever touched bottom in this lake. I thought, you know, she's way too pretty to let drown, so I jumped in after her and saved her. And we've been together ever since.
Yeah, I think that's the best story I've ever heard, ever, in my entire life, about how to meet your wife and your family. That is so cool.
Yeah, I was real happy. And we go caving all the time together. Matter of fact, it's a family thing for us. Every time we get a free weekend, we take the kids and stuff. Matter of fact, when I used to work there once before, well, back in 93, my daughter was just a baby, and at the time we didn't have a whole lot of money, so we didn't have enough money for a babysitter. I would take my daughter in my arms on tour with me, and so she grew up in caves. And
wow.
Now she's just, you know, just as smart about caves as, I guess, any 13-year-old girl. So, but it's always, you know, in something else, Dr. Bell, it seems like, you know, like the new section in Cosmic, it was like I believed it in everything in my heart,
yeah,
that something was back there. It wasn't just a knowledge thing.
Yeah.
I could feel it in my heart. And what's really odd is sometimes when I'm in a cave and I'm digging in a new section of cave, I can actually explain to the person next to me what it's going to look like before we bust through. I mean, it's like a gift.
That's,
you know,
amazing.
It is. It's just totally amazing. That's what I try to tell people. People ask me all the time, well, why do you explore caves? And I'm like, well, it's like something I was born with that I have to do, you know.
Well, that's important. You know,
it is.
And they have you were bringing out the fact, when you were extremely strict with everybody, where you don't touch anything. Explain to people why you don't touch anything in a cave.
Okay. Well, anytime you touch anything, you leave oils and salts behind from your fingertips. And that's where most of the oil is excreted, you know, through your fingertips. And anytime you touch a cave formation, you leave some of that oil and salt behind. And water and oil doesn't mix, so the water runs over the oil besides the formations, and it actually kills the formation. And that's a real big problem in any commercial cave. As a matter of fact, a lot of guys that I go cave with all the time, they hate what I do. You know, they hate that we hurt thousands of people a year through a cave, but the way I explain it to them, we use, like here in Arkansas, we have over 3,000 mapped caves, and there's only about 6 open to the public tours. What's wrong with taking 6 caves and making them into classrooms?
That's exactly, you know, what your tour was all about, yeah.
That's right, to educate people about caves. Caves are such a, you know, basically all a cave is a natural drainage system for the earth. And every time we pollute upstairs, you know, through septic tanks and things of that nature, all of that disappears down into the cave, and then it creates all kinds of problems for the cave itself. So a lot of times we can judge, by studying caves, we can judge how well we're taking care of the land up above where we live. So it's, you know, very important. It's kind of like studying the jungle, how you go in the jungle, you don't study every animal, you study the lion to figure out, because he's the king of the food chain.
Right.
Well, we're kind of the king of the food chain, and it kind of helps us when we study caves. It helps us to realize, hey, you know, we're not doing a good job taking care of our resources, or hey, you know, we're doing this right. So, but yeah, when you touch cave formations, it absolutely, you know, kills them. And what I tell people on my tours, especially when we have big tours and you can't really watch everybody, we tell people, hey, listen, if you catch somebody touching the cave, just knock them out. You know,
I like that.
We'll tell them to hit their head on something, and let the insurance take care of it, you know.
you got the right attitude. You know?
That's right. That's
you had
right.
everybody yeah. shaking in their boots going through there. You know, we had to bend over and not get our heads knocked into things. And
that's right. That's right. And it is a wonderful cave. Matter of fact, the cave is for sale. If anybody out there is interested, it's listed on the Internet. Is it okay to give it Internet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Give all the promotion you want, sure.
Cool. It's listed under outdoorproperties.com. That's their website. That's the people that has it listed. So the cave is for sale if anybody's interested.
Yeah, I talked to the lady on the phone that owns it. She's a real piece of work herself. Really nice lady. I guess her husband was a doctor formerly, and she was out of Connecticut, I guess. And came down there and bought that had some fun with it. And now I think she's too old to be there anymore, you know?
Yes, sir. She's 80 years old. She's been there 20 years.
Wow.
And, and she admits, you know, I mean, it's just time for a new owner, you know? But it's an awesome operation. The cave, the whole cave sits under the property.
Yeah, you got, 196 acres there, too?
196 acres, yes, sir.
Yeah.
So, and the cave sits all under the property, so it's the watershed is pretty protected. Of course, you know, you're always going to get water from further off than what you know of. But as far as we can tell, the cave sits under the property. So
yeah. Now, what about the water purity in there? Tell us about that.
Well, the water purity is, there's actually two different streams in the cave. The East Passage stream is pretty pure. We do have some contaminants that goes through the cave, and that comes from our North Passage. Limestone is one of the worst water filters, and that's
right.
What a lot of people don't understand. They see all this water coming out of the ground, and they go, oh, wow, let's go, you know, take a drink of that, and they get what we call Ozark revenge. They have to spend a lot of time in the restroom, but caves are actually a pretty bad water filter, and that's the reason we have to be very careful about what we do above ground. Like, for instance, here in our area, there's not any public landfill. We have to ship our trash way off because there's so many caves.
Oh, yeah, the trash just bleeds right down into the cave.
Right, that's exactly right. And you'd be surprised how many times we're out mapping a cave, you know, and we'll actually find another entrance getting out of the cave, and it'll be a sinkhole entrance, and here somebody has taken a bunch of dead cows or chickens or whatever, farmers and stuff, and throw it off down in the sinkhole. And, you know, plus as we're in the cave, we also see his well casing coming right down through the middle of the cave. And, you know, you go up there and knock on his door and say, hey, here's where your well is, and here's the sinkhole that you're throwing all the dead animals in, you know. So,
wow, I didn't realize you had that problem.
Yeah, well, it's not a problem. I mean, it is a problem, but most people are getting better educated through the years. I mean, like when I first started caving years ago, it was more of a problem. There's a lot of times you could be in a cave and actually smell the sewer.
Wow.
You know, because people...
That sounds like the cave I went up in Kentucky after yours. You know, it was just a big drain, you know.
Yeah. But we're getting better educated. You know, there's special grants that the government has to, you know, help people actually clean up sinkholes and stuff. That, you know, it's like, say, somebody buys a piece of land and there's a bunch of trash in a sinkhole. They've got some federal money aside that they can, you know, maybe help the owner get that stuff out of the cave.
Yeah, that's really good. Now, does the federal government ever come and visit you guys or any?
No, not really. The only problem, or not really a problem, the only time usually a federal government will come, you know, talk to you about your cave is if you have an endangered species. A lot of animals, troglodytic animals, included, that's animals that spend its entire life in total darkness.
Right.
There's a lot of animals that are on the federal endangered species list. Now, if you have a lot of those, the federal government a lot of times kind of step in and maybe give you some suggestions on how to protect the animals better, or, you know, I mean, they can, you know, put a gate on the cave and keep people from going in it too, you know, because you're not.
So you have a gate on your cave, right?
Yes, sir, we do.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and most commercial caves are gated. What a lot of commercial caves do is they build their gift shop fairly close to the entrance, like right there in the mouth of the cave, and that's kind of, you know, deters people from trying to break in and things of that nature, too. So,
yeah, now tell us about the bats, all the different kinds of bats that live there now, the kinds of bats that have lived there before, and how important they are, and how many insects these things can eat at night.
The big thing
is bats.
The bats, right now in Arkansas, and of course I'm no biologist, but right now in Arkansas, to my knowledge, the endangered bats that we have are the Ozark big-eared bats, which is only found in a few caves in Arkansas, and I think a cave or two in Oklahoma. And to my knowledge, in Missouri, there's no longer any colonies in Missouri. See, the Ozark big-eared, the Indiana bat, and the gray bat is the ones on the federal endangered species list. Now, the gray bat, apparently years ago, we used to have a lot of those in the cave. Scientists say that they think they were gray bats. They're in the Myotis family, and when they cluster on the ceiling, they'll cluster roughly 170 per square foot.
Wow.
And the Indiana bats, I think they roost roughly 400 to 500 per square foot.
Wow.
And that makes them really vulnerable to disturbance. So what happens a lot of times, people come into caves, and not knowingly, like in the wintertime when they're hibernating, and they disturb the bats, and if they come in and out of hibernation enough, they'll actually starve to death before the bugs return the next spring.
Really?
If there's a maternity colony, if there's a maternity colony, a lot of times the frightened mothers will drop their babies.
Wow.
They eat
tons of bugs when they fly out at night, don't they?
Yes. And it really adds up, like Bracken Cave, which is around San Antonio.
Yeah.
Texas has one of the largest bat colonies, if not the largest bat colony, Mexican Freetails. And every night when they go outside and feed, they eat roughly 200 tons of insects every night.
200 tons. That's a lot of mosquito bites that you're not going to get.
That's right. That's exactly right. So now bats can be broken up into two different groups, solitaires and socials. It seems like the social bats, like the gray bats and the Indianas and also the Ozark big-eared, their numbers, we really have to watch because, like I said, disturbance, you know, you've got thousands of bats in 1K. Well, if somebody goes, some idiot goes in there with a shotgun, and believe it or not, this has actually happened one time I know in a cave.
But don't let Dick Cheney in there.
That's right.
yeah,
really.
He's not allowed in caves over there, right? You don't want him in there. If he's shooting people,
right.
He'd be really hell on bats, right?
yeah. Oh, you're funny, man.
Yeah.
But bats are very beneficial animals. And all the bats that we have here in Arkansas, they're insectivores. They go outside and eat, you know, moths and mosquitoes and stuff. I was on a bat count one time with a biologist, and we were on this bridge overlooking this park, and we had night vision goggles, and he was showing me all the bats. And down below, here's people, you know, and this was at night, people were playing tennis, and they were running the track and all this. And they didn't even realize that up above their head, there were thousands of bats that were taking care of all the mosquitoes, you know, all the problems that they have. So, and, of course, the bat guano itself is really a rich food source for the cave. It's at the bottom of the food chain. They say, and I don't know if this is true, I've always heard this as a joke, that there's more protein in bat guano than steak.
I believe that because it's solid insects.
That's a solid insect.
In survival courses, they teach you, you know, like in Green Berets and stuff, you got to eat bugs.
There's nothing else around.
Yeah.
That's right. And I always thought if I ever got stuck in a cave and couldn't get out and I got hungry, that's probably one of the first things I'd try to eat would be the bat guano.
Yeah.
Nutritional aspect of it. But it's hard to have a strong ecosystem in a cave without having a lot of organics, you know, like large piles of guano or an active stream, you know. So if your stream is polluted with so much pollution, then the animals, your aquatics, cannot live in the, you know, in the cave. So,
yeah.
You know, all this plays in a key role. Like, for instance, caves with sinkhole entrances.
Right.
You know, all the leaves and things that fall down, that's all, you know, leaves, deer hunters, things like that fall in and can't get out, that's all food for the animals.
Yeah.
So.
You know, now tell us about the Indiana Jones thing where you're going along, and you're in a cave, it's a brand new cave, and then all of a sudden there's a big hole and you fall down 1,000 feet. You know?
Well, I've never personally had that happen, but sometimes Hollywood stretches things out just a little bit for us. But, you know, it's like when we go out and go rappelling, you know, you see like in Hollywood where people, they're bungee, you know, really far down, they're bouncing on the rope and all that. I mean, we try to move really slow because it's less strain on the rope, you know.
Yeah.
But I tell you, hey, one of the biggest problems in caves I know around here is false floors. That is a real
big problem. Yeah, explain that. You know, you were showing that to us. Explain about a false floor. That could be a really make your evening kind of rough.
Oh, it does. It really does. False floors can actually occur several different ways. And one of the most common ways here in the Ozarks is the cave has a lot of fill in it, which is called terracotta clay, this red earth stuff. And the clay will sit there a long time on the floor, and then a flowstone will start to form on top of the clay.
Yeah.
You know, a speleothem called a flowstone. Then the cave will flood, you know, like a 100-year flood or whatever, and the clay will wash out from under the flowstone and leave this freestanding ledge. And, for instance, there's a cave we were mapping not long ago, kind of find out there had been enough people that, you know, were mapping, and the guy that was in charge of the mapping said, "Hey, Chester, why don't you check out our symbols and stuff on our map here and make sure, you know, all the ledges and stuff are marked." And I looked on there and I saw Devil's Dance Floor. And I said, "What in the world is that?" And I asked him, I said, "What is this Devil's Dance Floor?" He kind of gave me a half-cracked smile and he said, "Go check it out. You need to see that." So, you know, I'm walking along this passage and, you know, I'm looking at the map and everything. Okay, Devil's Dance Floor right up here. Started walking, all of a sudden, boom, 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 boom. You could just hear this boy below me. So anytime we hear that, we lay down to kind of equal our body weight out, just like you do on ice. And I crawl out there on this ledge, and this false floor, and that's the biggest false floor ever. This false floor is probably about 50 feet, I'm guessing, undercut. It's unreal.
Yeah.
And I lay down on my back, and I look down. It's about an 80-foot drop to the floor, and I turn around and look up, and it's about probably 50 or 60 feet up. And there's a huge lead at the top. I mean, big, romping, stomping cave. And I asked the guy in charge, I said, "Man, what's up there?" And he goes, "We don't know. And if you can figure out how to get up there, go for it. But you can't do it." You know, it's just one of those impossible climbs with that false floor involved. But that's a big problem. That's a real big problem when you're
caving. Do people ever get hurt on that?
I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those things. A lot of, I've taken some cave rescue classes, and one thing they taught me is, you know, when you go in to do a rescue, and this is kind of a joke, but when you go in and do a rescue and there's an idiot that got hurt, it's kind of customary to make sure he has more injuries, you know, when he comes out than when he actually fell. That way he'll never do it again. But a lot of it's the person, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's some people that just don't belong in caves. You know, we always move slow. We take our time, pay attention to details. A lot of times, as a matter of fact, every bad accident that I personally know of that's happened around here has always been people were not watching the weather conditions or they were moving too fast.
Right.
You know, you've got to go slow and take your time, you know. And it, I mean, freaky things do happen in caves. But, you know, you actually, if you go in a cave, that's the difference between a caver and a spelunker. A caver rescues spelunkers.
Okay.
Kind of reverse terminology. Spelunkers are people that go in caves with a Bic lighter and a six-pack of beer. You know?
Oh, wow.
And so cavers go in, you know, with resources a lot, helmet, knee pads, and they always tell somebody where they're going. That way, if something freaky happens, you know, somebody's going to come look for you.
Yeah.
You know? Tell somebody that loves you, not your ex-wife or anybody, you know, somebody.
Yeah. Well, you meet your wife in caves, and then they jump out and fall out of the boat and stuff. I mean, that's your trip. Definitely.
That's right.
So tell me about it. The outlaws used to hang out in these caves a long time ago?
Yeah, that's true. Even at Hurricane River Cave, part of the younger gang supposedly hid out in the cave, and I don't know how true that story is. I haven't seen any factual information on that, and I usually don't mention that much on my tours, but yeah, a lot of caves, you know, in here in the Ozarks especially, you know, Jesse James hideouts and stuff. Now, Merrimack Caverns up at, I think it's Stanton, Missouri, they're pretty sure, you know, Jesse James was in their cave, but a lot of times, I mean, I wish I had a dollar for every cave that I've heard that was a Jesse James hideout. You know,
yeah.
Jesse James didn't have enough time to rob banks. He was too busy.
He was always hanging out in caves. I know.
So, but yeah, Merrimack Caverns, they're the ones that, they're pretty sure that they, you know, Jesse James was in there and everything. So that's pretty cool to go up there and see that. But yeah, a lot of, there's a lot of stories that float around in caves, of course. You know, I've heard just about everything. You know, people finding lost or looking for lost treasure and things
like
that.
Yeah, what's the deal with that lost treasure cave up the road from you?
That's Old Spanish Treasure Cave. Now, that actually has some pretty factual information as far as some Spanish treasure being buried in that cave. The guy that owns that cave, he's a pretty good friend of mine. And matter of fact, I used to work with him at Cosmic. And he showed me some documents and stuff that I'm kind of leaning like, you know, something is buried in there. And there's been two or three families, I think, that have totally went through their whole life fortune looking for this treasure, but nobody's found it yet. So,
wow.
Pretty interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what makes exploring caves so fun. You never know what you're going to find. You know,
I want to tell you something real quick. This is my my trip with treasures. Back when I worked at NASA in the 60s, about mid-60s, there was a friend of mine who, his name was Mel Fisher. He owned a shop in Redondo Beach called The Bottom Shop, and I was a scuba diver then. And my friend that worked with me in Compton at NASA, his name was Buddy. And Mel Fisher sold his bottom shop one day, back about 64, and moved down to Florida to go looking for the Spanish Main. And he called me up, and Buddy called me up and said, Fred, you know, we want you to come on down because we know you're a good diver and everything, and we want you to come on down to Florida. We're going to find the Spanish Main. And I said, yeah, that sounds like, you know, that sounds great, but I didn't go, you know. So he went down there, and he found it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he found it.
Wow.
And the guys all became incredibly rich. I mean, they had fights with Florida and Cuba about the treasure and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
In the end, they ended up with quite a bit of money. And I never, you know, it's funny how you get the crossroads of your life. And you could. I stayed on at NASA and became a really good rocket scientist and got to work with Wernher von Braun, which was great. But, I mean, I could have probably been a multimillionaire a lot sooner had I gone down there and just swam around in the water down there and found this cave. I mean, not cave,
well,
but the treasure.
Your luck sounds like mine.
Yeah, no, that's why I really hooked up with you, Chester. You're really cool. And
you know,
I'm a little bit older than you, but I think by the time you get to be my age, I'm 64, you probably have more stories than I do, you know.
I don't know. I was reading on your website, you're a remarkable man. And
I'm more like crazy. Crazy, you know.
That's what my grandpa always said. There's a thin line between crazy and just, you know,
the only difference between me and total insanity is if I try something once, you know, I don't try it again to get a different result. I realize that's the result.
Right.
Thin line that I walk on, you know.
That's right.
But anyway, getting back to the caves now. First thing you said, you were talking about walking. Well, first of all, about the lights, because we were in there in total darkness. We just had these little lanterns that you gave us. We didn't have any lights on until we got to the main room.
Right.
Why was that? Why do you do that?
Well, a big problem. You know, and you can't do this in all caves. You know, the Hurricane River Cave. It's a fairly small cave. A lot of the passageways are fairly small, so you can illuminate them with a lantern. And the there's hardly any steps in the cave. But the reason we chose to do lanterns is it's better for the cave environment. And that, you know, we're only going to be here for, you know, a few years, and the cave is going to be here probably for a long time, and we need to preserve it for our kids. And the way the lanterns help the cave is the electric lights in caves, it causes algae to grow around the lights, and algae is probably one of the biggest problems that commercial caves have is, you know, there's total darkness in the cave naturally, so you put all this unnatural light in the cave, and the algae, when it grows on the formation, it can actually deteriorate the cave formation. And what a lot of caves have to do is they have to use a solution of bleach and water to spray the algae to kill it. And, you know, which that sounds bad, but it's kind of the less of two evils, because if you don't spray it, you know, you have a nice garden in the cave from the lights being on. And a lot of caves have tried, like, the orange and amber lights. That doesn't cause algae to grow as bad as the white lights. So, you know, with us doing the lantern tours, we don't have an algae problem anymore in the cave, and we notice a lot more animals in the cave. You know,
yeah, and that's kind of a lesson to having lessons, you know, different types of lights in your house.
Right, Right. That's right. And what we use is we use rechargeable lanterns, and there's 20-watt LED bulbs, and we get like 14 hours of light, you know, and out of the lanterns before we had to recharge them. And it's cut our electric bill down. I mean, the
lanterns. What is your electric bill running that place before you did
that? Oh, yeah, just in Hurricane River Cave. I went back there one day and counted light bulbs. We had roughly 300 light bulbs, and
wow.
Each one of them was at least 75 watts.
Wow.
So, you know, you're pumping out some juice when you're doing that. So,
what about these new neon lights that are that screw into the thing? Do those work? They still create a lot of algae or not?
They not as bad as the incandescent bulbs.
Yeah.
They can still be a problem. Any kind of light that's on in the cave will, you know, cause problems because it is unnatural to the cave environment. So what we do is we're just kind of walking through a pool of light.
Yeah.
Is what we're doing, you know. And so it's we don't have an algae problem. We have more. And another problem with the algae is it also creates an unnatural food source for the animals, too, in the cave.
Wow.
And our lights have been off a month, and I can still see the algae around some of the light shields.
Wow.
So it's been real positive for us. And, I mean, you know, I think more caves would go to that if they could, but you know, like if you're in a huge cave, you know, like Carlsbad or something, you know, these big rooms, the lanterns are just not going to give you enough light. You know, or if you got a cave with 700, you know, steps, you know, it's kind of treacherous, you know, holding a lantern and trying to hold the handrail and holding your camera. But, you know, it takes a special cave for that. But a lot of caves, or excuse me, several caves that I know of have actually gone back to lanterns. A long time ago, they used to use lanterns, but they were their old gasoline, you know, little kerosene lanterns, and that wasn't good for the cave. So electricity, you know, come out, and wow, let's light everything up with electricity. But now with the lanterns, you know, we're not having the algae problem, we're not causing all these serious problems in the cave, and it actually gives everybody a true experience of exploring the cave. I don't know if you felt that, Dr. Bill.
Oh, I felt it.
Yeah, and it's like you're exploring the cave. So I honestly believe as time goes on, more and more caves will probably do lantern tours, I'm sure, you know.
Well, the other thing is when you have it way in the back and we all turned our lanterns off when in total darkness.
Yes, that's
that
right.
That was good.
That is good. I love to do total darkness with my groups because when you turn out the lights, you know, it just really kind of brings you into what you know, where you're at, what you're doing, you know, you're underground, you know, 20 stories and you know, you're totally surrounded by nature itself, and, you know, it just, I love to turn out the lights and just let people, you know, almost meditate for a while.
Anybody ever freak out when you do that?
Yeah, more grown-ups than kids, actually. Yeah, that happens a lot with our parents. Usually the parents turn the lights on quicker than the kids, and that's another thing about, you know, a lot of caves are not even wired to do total darkness, but with the lantern tours, anytime the group brings it up, hey, you know, can we do total darkness or whatever, we can stop and do total darkness right there with everybody, you know. So
now, going to the next thing,
uh-huh.
This is the next phase I want to get into. You know, when I was a kid down in Arkansas, and I lived over there in Pleasant Plains for a while, you know, on
mm-hmm.
Saturday night, we'd get our cars out. We didn't have driver's licenses. We'd race up and down the street. We went to this little theater down in Heber Springs that I used to go to. You paid 25
uh-huh.
cents and watched a movie, and you went out and got crazy afterwards. Things that they'd lock you up in California, you know, to do
right.
now.
Right.
Now, the Indians, on the other hand, in those days, had a little different thing. They didn't have cars, and you know, the Indians did some amazing things, like in the teens. They got pretty brave.
That's true.
And so tell us a little bit about the Indians in your cave.
Okay. Well, there at the entrance of the cave, scientists believe the Indians occupied the area there in front of the cave entrance, you know, just outside the cave, for roughly 1,000 years. And in 1989, the current owner, her son, Roby, he was really deep in the cave, actually as far from the entrance as you can possibly get, and he found a human skeletal remains of a young Native American, roughly 14 years of age. And scientists believe that his bones are at least 300 years of age. And at Blanchard Springs Caverns, where I used to work, they found an Indian skeleton in that cave that's 1,100 years old.
Wow.
So, and now, to my knowledge, and maybe people can email the cave and prove me wrong on this, but to my knowledge, just about every Indian skeleton that is found deep in a cave, now we're not talking right around the entrance, but we're talking several, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of feet in the cave, have always been young males, roughly between the ages of 12 and 18 years of age.
They were very, very exploratory.
That's right. Just like, and that kind of goes back to exactly what you were saying. During that time, you know, and I'm sure you remember, Dr. Bell, when you were that age, you just, you know, nothing can kill you, you know, and you're very adventurous, and that's, you know, sometimes it costs them their lives. You know?
What kind of flashlights did the Indians use?
the old torch. And that's what amazes me, Dr. Bell, is in our North Passage, anywhere you look in the clay, there's bits and pieces of charcoal. And when I worked at Blanchard Springs Caverns, I used to lead wild cave tours there. That's the a cave managed by the U.S.
Wait a minute. Explain what a wild cave tour is.
Well, we take people off the regular commercial route. And we, like at Hurricane River Cave, we offer two different wild cave tours. We furnish everybody with equipment. That's helmets, lights, knee pads, and gloves. And they actually get to explore the cave with us, which is a lot of fun. And I highly encourage anybody that's interested in caves to do a wild cave tour.
This is the real Indiana Jones experience,
isn't
it?
It's the real... It can be. We have a lot of fun moments on the wild cave tour. It's amazing people's reactions. You know, they think they're up to it, but then they get off the trail, and then they're like, oh, I think I better just... And that's what makes our wild cave tour so cool, is we have enough caves that we can switch it up to kind of accommodate the group. You know, we start doing something real hairy, and the people, of course, have to sign a release form before they, you know, go off the trail with us. But, you know, if they're kind of getting scared, you know, we can change it up to where they're not so scared. Or if we get somebody that's, you know, really agile and they're really pumped up, you know, kind of like a 14-year-old, 15-year-old boy, you know, we can make his heart pump a little bit, you know, on the wild cave tour.
Well, I know some of those, you might be in a big cavern 1 minute, but you're crawling down in something you can barely squeeze through to get to the next place, right? And
you're
way underground, it's totally dark.
That's right. Matter of fact, one of our wild cave tours has such a tight spot that myself, and I'm not a very, very large guy, I'm about medium size, I have to lay down and relax my body for about 10 minutes and then breathe out and push my body through the hole. That's how tight it is. It doesn't even have enough room for me to breathe. That's a chest compressor.
Wow, how long do you have to do that? How thick is that area?
About three pushes with my toes, and I'm through the tightest spot. It's very, very short, but it's very, very tight. It's so tight that our helmet, if you turn your helmet on your side, it will not fit through the hole.
That's tiny.
It is very, very tiny. If you're a size, women, we tell them if they're larger than a size 14 in a dress, there's no way they'll fit.
Wow. So, and this is on a wild cave tour.
That's on the wild cave tour, yeah.
That's amazing.
And I've had people come off the wild cave tour, I mean, just jumping and hollering, you know, woo, I made it. You know, they're just so pumped up. I've had people tell me that they could not sleep that night after doing the wild cave tour because they were still so pumped up, you know. And so it's a lot of fun. It really is. And what I do is on my wild cave tours, you know, I'm always stressing conservation, you know, and I'll even get my groups to help me maybe find, you know, critters in the cave. We'll even do like a bio survey of the cave and try to identify different animals and we always try to leave the cave in better shape than what it was when we started. Like if we see some trash that somebody might have fell out of their pocket or whatever, we pick that up, or maybe some old graffiti, we'll take a squirt bottle with some water in it and a brush and remove it and stuff. So, you know, I always try to gear my people towards conservation, because especially youngsters, I mean, because one day I'm gonna be too old, and some of these guys will probably step up, and you know they need to learn some conservation.
Yeah, well, you know what, Mikkel, my girlfriend and I, our favorite thing was the Pirates of the Caribbean. You know,
uh-huh.
going in that, you know, at Disneyland, right?
Right.
Now, Mikkel's never been in the cave before. I've been in a few, but she hadn't. Now her favorite thing is going into the cave, you know, because that's the real deal. That's not Disneyland.
That's right. That's exactly right.
It doesn't cost much more than an e-ticket at Disneyland anyway.
That's true.
And the other thing is, we got way there in the back, and there was this little wishing well where people threw coins in.
Right.
Now, explain what the danger of that is and why those coins are just left alone. And how the doctor, that guy that talked to you about that.
Yes, that's true. The problem with having a wishing well in a cave, now some caves regulate their wishing wells. They'll put a little concrete, put down some concrete and build up some sides, and they have a wishing well that they can kind of control. But where they started a wishing well in our cave is actually the cave stream itself. And the bad thing is, one, you lose your money, and two, you're polluting the cave. All that metal and stuff, you know, is slow, as it falls to the bottom and stays there, the water is dissolving that metal away, you know.
Yeah, because if you remember, just interrupt, I was going to jump in there and grab all that money, you know, but then you told me not to, because now explain why you can't grab all that money.
Yeah, the main reason is when you go in, if you go in there and disturb all that at once, you're going to release a lot of metal at once, and you could actually wipe out the aquatic life from there all the way to the entrance of the cave. So it's better just to let it set and let it slowly dissolve away, and probably in cave floods, clay will cover it over and stuff, and just kind of let nature slowly take care of it in her own way, in her own time. You know, we've already done the damage. If we get in there and try to fix it now, you know, we could really, really damage the cave. That's one thing I've learned in caves. Anytime you get ready to do anything in the cave, always get a second opinion. You know, because that was my first reaction.
No, that was brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, clean all that stuff out, you know. And here, I was going to do something that could have been devastating to the cave.
Yeah.
You know, and we sure don't want to, you know, do that. I mean, I would have, I couldn't have slept knowing I did something so ignorant, you know. So a lot of times our intentions are right. It's just that we, you know, we don't know enough about caves. You know, it's a three-dimensional drainage system, and it's an unnatural environment, you know, and go talk to some specialists before you, you know, do anything like that.
And the funny thing about it is the bats, that's their natural habitat. When I was over in Tennessee a few years ago, I was jogging one afternoon, and there weren't enough caves over there. I mean, I was running into bugs. My cars, their windshields, because there wasn't enough caves over there where I was, outside of Nashville. Because the bats, there weren't enough bats around there. In the south, in the summer, in some of these areas where there's no caves, the bugs are incredibly thick.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
And Brown, you guys, no bugs at all.
No bugs at all. Matter, we get a lot of people, Hurricane River Cave, we get a lot of people from Louisiana and places like that, and they're always coming up here, you know, oh, we need to take some bats home with us, you know, we have so many mosquitoes and so many bugs, and thinking, yeah, you know, I wish more of the local people realized, you know, how important our caves are and how important our bats are, because one thing we have found through the years, Dr. Bell, is a lot of it is the local people just don't appreciate what we have. You know, those a lot of times are the people that kind of mess things up for us. So,
well, you know what Jesus said, a prophet has no honor in his own land.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. So that's like the incident I was telling you about where the people went in with a shotgun and shot a bunch of bats. They were gray bats. They're on the federal endangered species list. We'll come to find out they were just some local people, you know, some local boys. And out to have a good time. So
did you string them up? Did you have an old-fashioned vigilante hanging afterwards, or what?
I tell you what we used to do. This is back when during my wild years.
I want to hear about your wild years.
We I settled down a lot through the years, but we used to go to a lot of caves just right around locally, and we'd see somebody's name on the wall, and we would write that name down. And they would make us a list, and we'd go get the phone book. And we'd figure out where these people live. We could find their name in the phone book. Then we'd go down the driveway, and we would throw out all of our trash or something like that and make them pick it up or something of that nature, you know, just to agitate them. But Anyway, that was my wild years doing stuff like that.
Well, you weren't wild enough. I could tell you worse stories than that where I could have been arrested.
Well, I tell you, I've seen some caving buddies of mine just about getting fist fights with people over stuff like that.
They should. We should take all the cavers and teach them martial arts and turn them loose on people that screw up caves.
Well, recently, the butterfly formation in Caverns of Sonora in Southwest Texas got stolen, and there's some of my friends. They were, having pie sales and everything else to raise money to go whip this guy's tail in Texas for stealing that butterfly formation, you know. So, yeah, it makes you want to be that way because, you know, like when we go in and we're, like, say we're... Like I've taken some speleothem restoration classes where we can actually, if we find the cave formations that are busted, we can repair them. Or, you know, you may spend hours and hours taking spray paint off the wall from some idiot.
Now speaking of marks on the walls, remember you pointed the flashlight at the ceiling? We were down there and we were looking up about 50 feet at some charcoal. Tell us about what we saw and what that was about. Remember those markings on the roof?
Yeah. That is one of the older signatures in the cave. The oldest signature in the cave is 1829. The signature that we saw was December 1st, 1895, and there was two signatures there.
That's 100 and some years old.
That's 100 and some years old. And what they used back then is they used the soot from a candle burning or the soot from a carbide light burning and wrote their name on the wall. So just down the hill from the cave is the second largest zinc mine in Arkansas. It was in operation between 1880 and 1920, and there was not a gate on the cave, and people that worked the mine got their water from the cave system. So everybody knew the cave was there, and people come and explored and things of that nature. And so there's a lot of, you know, history that needs to be saved in caves. And we could take that. You know, the soot is one of the easiest things to take off a wall. All you gotta do is walk in with a squirt bottle with some water and a stiff brush, and it comes off.
But it was still there.
It was still there, because nobody's disturbed it.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, think about it. Matter of fact, one of the signatures that we saw was one of the first shareholders in the zinc mine at the bottom of the hill that I just talked about. And the other guy, C.M. Duke, I'm not really for sure who he was, but his name is found throughout the entire cave system. So he was quite the caver, you know. And but today, when we're in caves, we try to think of three things. Take nothing but pictures, leave nothing but footprints, and kill nothing but the person who took more than pictures and left more than footprints. That's what we do.
Well, when Mikkel was in there, we took my girlfriend, the big tall girl.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She took some pictures in your cave and Total Darkness. And
cool.
She picked up some orbs and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now,
some spirits in there.
That wouldn't surprise me, Dr. Bell, because the guy who did most of the commercialization in the cave, his name was Jim Skimmerhorn.
Yeah.
And he was a famous cave explorer in Arkansas. Matter of fact, he gets credit for finding the biggest cave in Arkansas, which is...
Wow.
On Buffalo National River. But anyway, I've had several cavers say that when they go in the cave, they can feel his spirit.
Right, because I think we took a picture of it.
Right. I'm going to tell you something that happened to me. It was kind of odd. When I worked at Blanchard, there's this place in the lower level that there's this rock with all these pieces of torches laying out on this rock, and not far from this spot is where the Indian was found.
Wow.
Well, at that cave, what we're supposed to do, we have two guys, one at the front, one at the back, and the guy at the back, he goes up to that rock and he watches those sticks, make sure nobody touches them before the group comes up. Well, all of a sudden, I felt this enormous energy, like you would not believe, this really sad, sad feeling coming towards me. And when it hit me, Dr. Bell, it just made me weep uncontrollably.
Wow.
So anyway, the tour guide comes up with the group and they're like, Chester, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'll explain it later. And I've never had that particular thing happen, you know. But, yeah, you can feel these, you know, spirits sometimes in the cave.
Mikkel is, like, developed. She's a very psychic person. She's way too sensitive, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, but that's her generation, you know. I mean, she's a very high-level sensitive. And you obviously have the same characteristics. I'm like a bull in the china shop with this stuff. But I have to respect people like you and her that you sense it, she photographs it. And this
right.
is a brand new thing for her. She was
That's
taking
cool.
normal pictures, and all of a sudden, with the same camera, stuff starts showing up. And
wow.
And then if you watch the Sci-Fi Channel, you see
uh-huh.
the pictures where they go in haunted houses, and there's these orbs, and they explain all this, and the heat tent change, they measure the heat and the infrared.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we picked up on that in that cave. It was really amazing.
Wow, that's
way cool.
Yeah, there's a matter of fact.
We'll email you some stuff,
Oh, I would love. Yeah, if you could share that with me, I would. I'd love to get my hands on some of that.
Yeah, we'll send you some pictures.
Oh, I'd love that. Well, I've felt things like that too before in caves, and like I mentioned earlier, sometimes when I'm digging in a cave, it's like I know it in my. Not in my mind, but in my heart.
Right, that's the feeling, right. Yeah.
It's a feeling, that you get when you enter something like that. I'm real in tune to caves, and I was born, with this awesome sense of adventure to explore caves. And people should go for that. They should... if you're born with something like that, you should go for it.
Well, you're going towards the center of the earth, and a lot of the Indian nations claim they came out of the center of the earth. Some came from extraterrestrial sources. A lot of other tribes claim they came out of the hollow earth.
Right.
So who knows who's right, but the bottom line is there is a phenomenon. And I'm just telling my listeners out there and explaining to them my feeling, if you've never been in a cave... You need to do one. There's
right.
absolutely nothing. I was lucky because I lived up by Heber Springs there, and we did that cave up there when I was a kid.
Yeah,
in Arkansas.
Blanchard, probably.
Yeah, it wasn't much. It was just a big room and everything, but it was something. And
mm-hmm.
and then I had a friend over in Kentucky that had a cave, not Kentucky, but in Tennessee, a private cave up there and out of Nashville. Tony Colton, he's a songwriter. I went in his cave, but it was too muddy. It was a real muddy ones,
Right.
But I'm telling you, it is an experience going in there and then turning the lights off. It really is.
That's true.
Yeah.
And Dr. Bell, what I tell people, too, that every cave, I think everybody should try to go see as many caves as they can because they all offer something a little different.
Yeah,
they do. And a little unique. And they're a special place.
Yeah.
And definitely try to hit the caves that do total darkness.
Yeah,
I think that's definitely a plus to any cave if they can do total darkness.
Yeah.
So.
Well, anyway, give out your phone number, or I can do it for the Hurricane River Cave. People want to go down there.
Okay. If you want to, I'll go ahead and let you give that out.
Okay.
You have our 1-800 number.
Yeah, the 245-2282.
Yep.
It's 1-800-245-2282, and that's how people can. Reach you, right?
Yes, sir. And me and my wife are usually the ones that answer the phone. And if anybody's interested in the Wild Cave Tour, we'll be happy to accommodate. Well, matter of fact, we'll even if they tell us that they heard about you on if they heard about us on your radio show, we'll give them a big discount. How about that?
That's really, really generous. Yeah,
and
you'll scare the heck out of them too, right?
Well, I can.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll pay you for that.
But you need to come see us again, too, Dr.
Oh, we're coming
Bell.
Back. We're coming back.
Good. Good. We really enjoyed taking you and your family and stuff in the cave. Now, your son, is that right? He's talking about being a geologist?
That wasn't Mikkel's son. That was the other girl, Lori.
Okay.
That was
right.
her son and her daughter, the wild ones,
Right.
Her daughter was, remember she dropped her lantern and she did all the stuff you told her not to do. She did it all. That was really cute, though,
Oh, well, it happens every day. It ain't no big deal.
If you lift your lantern up too high by the handle, it falls off and you're in darkness.
That's right. Yeah. we need to work on those handles, that's for sure.
But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So
anything else you want to say in closing? We got about a minute left, and we got to take off out of here,
Well, Dr. Bell, again, if you don't mind, I'll mention that the cave is for sale, and
yeah.
We sure would like to have a new owner at the cave. Lady owns the cave. She's ready to retire, and they can find out about the cave at outdoorproperties.com.
Right.
So, I really enjoyed talking to you. I love talking caves and this is definitely my biggest audience that I've ever talked to.
Well, you had a big audience here. You're in 104 countries tonight.
Wow.
Osama bin Laden might be listening to you. He might, you know, he's a cave guy.
Well, you tell him to come see me. I got a hole I want to stick him in.
Yeah, you got to tell him. Osama bin Laden needs to have a little private tour in your cave, doesn't he?
Hey, that's right. We'll sell tickets to come, you know, swat him on the behind or something.
That would be good. That would be excellent. Yeah,
well,
he's the only caver I know besides you, and I don't really think I'd want to hang out in the same cave with him without a grenade in his pants or something.
Well,
you know?
I tell you, I'd love for him to come hang out with me. I got something I want to show him.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm going to take him to the devil's dance floor and push him off. How about that?
That would be good. Now, I haven't heard about that. We'll have to get you back on here again. So you need to go out and rustle up some more stories, and we'll get you back on one of these days.
Hey, that sounds good, Dr. Bell. And it's been my privilege to talk to you and your guest tonight.
All right. I got to run.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bell.
Okay. Thanks. Tonight, this is Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. You've been listening to our guest tonight, Chester Beck, who has given us one heck of a tour of the world in what we're doing. And so anyhow, we're signing off now. I'm warming up my car, and I'm going to kick it off, and we're out of here. And don't forget, the Crystilla Dome is out, and thank you. I love the chat room tonight. A lot of interesting stuff going on over there. A little hanky-panky, it looked like. So anyhow, I'm out of here. Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, signing off.